The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Users lose all sense of reality and enter another world. Remember, do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Podcast Beyond, episode 273. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside Magnet Man himself, Colin Moriarty.
Yeah, I'm here. Hello.
You want to tell the story behind that? You were a kid, you used to run around with a Fisher-Price magnet on your head to be Magnet.
That's true.
Magnet
That's
true. Man from...
Mega Man 3. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I used to... We had this... I don't know what it was. It was a Fisher-Price magnet. It was huge.
Yeah. Was it? It just looked like a magnet. It wasn't real. It wasn't like
no. It was like a real magnet, but it was like very weak. You know, and it was like it had plastic around it on the outsides.
Were you like running by, getting caught in the fridge?
wasn't that strong?
Wrenching your neck.
But I used to after Mega Man 3 came out, I got it for Christmas that year, so it was 1990, I guess. And then I used to take the magnet and rubber band it to my head.
You got
upside
a magnet
down.
For Christmas that was the gift?
No, like it was just part, it was...
Here you go, go get some scrap, son.
I got Mega Man 3 for Christmas.
Stay away from the fridge.
And I don't know, this out-of-context magnet that we had, I used to just rubber band it to my head and then run around jumping all over the place, shooting my fake arm cannon and stuff like that. It was a very interesting childhood.
Well, to your left is none other than the Dark Knight of News, Andrew Goldfarb.
Hi.
You're wearing glasses. Do you want to talk about this?
I'm just wearing Colin's glasses.
How you like it? You look better. You look good.
They're slipping off my face.
You look better. You look good. Insinuating.
I mean, I would say you should
so
get some glasses.
I normally look like shit.
Do you wear contacts normally? Or?
No.
Got the perfect vision.
These are making things a little blurry. It's kind of giving me a headache.
Well, you're going to need glasses and contacts after this.
Yeah, after wearing this.
Powerhouse still dead. Still doesn't care about you. Remember that he abandoned you to go be a PC fan and now doesn't care about the podcast either. But in his stead, the beard in chief, Casey Lynch.
What's going on?
Not much, Casey. How are you?
I'm really good.
Making
you?
your thunderous return to Podcast Beyond.
That's right. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. First day back in the office. Sorry we're a day late. It's not Tuesday. It's Wednesday. If you didn't know, you're listening to Podcast Beyond, IGN's PlayStation podcast. The number one PlayStation podcast on the internet. Even though currently the Mac will not stop telling me that I need to log in with new information for the Wi-Fi here. Even though I keep canceling it and saying, I don't care.
It insists.
It's insisting upon itself.
Can't you just turn off Wi-Fi?
Could I do that, Goldfarb?
At the very top.
I use an iPhone. I don't use
so
this.
At the very top.
I'm clicking on, turn off Wi-Fi? Done. Yeah. There it is. It's not searching no more.
Not searching no more.
Nah, you can't leave. First day back. How's it been going for everybody? How's the first day back in the office?
I brought donuts.
You did?
You did bring donuts.
Yeah.
I'm trying to wake up. I slept a lot on the break, so I'm not used to waking up at a normal human being's time.
It's 2:25 p.m. How's that working out?
Trying to wake up at 2:25 p.m.
That's about right.
I'm due for another cup of coffee after this.
Yeah. Well, you spilled one in the PlayStation conversation we did earlier.
I didn't spill it. I poured it out for my homie, the PlayStation 2.
You spilled it out.
Okay, that's better.
Yeah, things are fine. A lot of emails to answer today.
We're just deleting them all.
I told you my resolution this year is I'm not sending any more emails to anyone.
Lots of snail mail.
We got some videos in the works. We have an exclusive that we're working on with Sony right now, which is very exciting. And we'll have more information on that soon.
Do you feel rejuvenated? Over the break, we both made a point not to work.
Yep. Yeah, I didn't work over which is very unique for us because we don't like to step away, you know, even when we're supposed to step away.
A lot of people tweeting us stuff. The PlayStation 2's discontinued. We're like, too bad. I got a DC Universe here. Colin's making sausage.
Yeah, I think we both made a point to do what we never do, which is to step away.
Yep.
I feel rejuvenated. I feel ready. I have a lot of ideas. I was raring to go, in a sense. Mm-hmm. because I had all these things that I kind of wanted to do, but you know, marinating on them is only going to make them stronger. And go. So, yeah. So then some of the news had to wait. That's okay. We got, you know, the things up today, the PS2, for instance. And
well, actually, our crack news editor Casey Lynch was he wrote like 5 stories over the break,
sitting in my pajamas.
Yeah, no, that was great.
So is that what you did over break, Casey?
I did lots of things, mostly just all that revolved around my kids.
Yeah.
You know, Christmas, presents, playing, lots of Minecraft, lots of Mario, Wii U. And I wrote some stories. Rockstar posted 5 new GTA screens on Christmas Eve at about 8 o'clock at night. Like, what?
Asshole.
What are you thinking, Rockstar? I mean, please.
Jerks telling us about their game.
And then there was news that Dead Space 3 would get a co-op demo. And Xbox Live subscribers get it a week early if they log into some website. And Walking Dead was free.
Yeah.
Episode 1 was free up until – actually, it's not anymore. I think it stopped being free yesterday.
And then Tomb Raider.
Oh, yeah. Tomb Raider multiplayer was announced. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Boom. And we're actually going to look at that next week.
Look at that. Lots of stuff. Lots of stuff. We're all back. We're all excited to be mm-hmm. back.
We are.
That's good. Well, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be. The Roper Report. Time for some news.
Yes.
That was a good one.
Yeah, that was.
We're back.
Yeah,
we had the low key Christmas podcast. Now we're back.
Yeah, when I did dishes during the middle of the podcast.
Yeah, this is annoying me. And you just got up and did dishes.
I had to do it. It was bothering me. There are 5 items on the list this week. Instead of making the list as I usually do, I kind of just pulled them up on my phone because the list is just not as robust as it once was.
Video game industry in general. Getting back on track, getting the engines going.
It's going to be a good year.
Yeah.
So where do we start? Let's start with the biggest news. PlayStation 2 production ceases in Japan.
Yes.
Story reads as such by Colin Moriarty. That's me. Esquire. Sony's PlayStation 2, the best-selling gaming console of all time, has seen its final days in native Japan after over 150 million pieces of hardware sold over a period ranging nearly 13 years. Sony has revealed that production of the console has ceased in Japan. Develop Online is reading Famitsu. That's the source of the article. And they say that Sony told the nation's retailers that it will not deliver any more PS2s for sales in stores. Mm-hmm. And I reached out to Sony today to kind of verify if this kind of stops production around the world. Obviously, I think the PS2s are probably all produced in China. So you assume that it's worldwide. But
sure.
Our friend Al at Sony is going to get back to us on that. Just real quick. Interesting stats that I actually brought up when Casey was given the morning meeting today. As of 2011, early 2011, 10,828 individual titles were released for PlayStation 2. 1.5 billion plus software units sold, which is about 135,000 per game. So good selling games on PS2.
Yeah.
Best selling game is still San Andreas. PS2 is the best selling console of all time. I want people to be clear because some of the people are mad in the comments. DS has sold more than PS2. No one calls DS a console. It's a handheld. So it is the best selling. PlayStation is in second place at 102 million. Wii is right there. I'm sure we'll eventually pass PS1 at 98 million.
Well, now that they got that Canadian 99 Wii U out there,
that's what
they were waiting
push
for.
Push them over the edge.
That's what most of the nursing homes were doing. Big Tony Style writes into Beyond at IGN.com. He says, with the PlayStation 2 stopping production, I thought it would be fun for the Beyond crew to share some of their favorite PS2 memories. Because we did a PlayStation conversation today, kind of somber.
Mm-hmm.
You got saying goodbye to this thing. We remember the price drop a few years back, and we were like, why the hell would anybody care about this? But now that they're stopping making them, even though I haven't thought or seen a PlayStation 2 in a store in a long time.
Right.
It's sad, I guess.
I haven't played a PlayStation. The last time I played a PlayStation 2 was when Wild Arms 4 came out. And that was...
You didn't review or do anything guide-like or anything?
Not on PS2. Well, Manhunt was the only PS2 guide I wrote after I got hired, and that was before Wild Arms. So mm-hmm. I reviewed Wild Arms, I think, and that was... That's Xseed's first published game, as far as I understand. Okay. And a very late PS2 game that almost didn't make it to the States. But like we said on PlayStation Conversation today, my favorite story is still getting a PS2 when it came out. And like I said on the video, not to reiterate, because you know the story that... You know, I'm sure you guys remember, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners remember that PS2s were rare, and a lot of stores wouldn't sell them unless you bought a game, a memory card, a warranty, and an extra controller. And so my mom bought me one right after my birthday in October of 2000, and it was my birthday present, my Christmas present, and my next year's birthday present.
You rolled big on that one.
Yeah, and it was a roll worthy of PlayStation 2.
Yeah, I had to fight so hard to get a PS2 because I had just gotten a Dreamcast a year before, and so like wanting another console a year later, my dad wasn't super happy about. Man, for me though, some of my best PS2 memories are like Guitar Hero. Like, I mean, just sitting around with people playing Guitar Hero for like hours and hours and hours. Cause like, I still played it once it came to 360 and everything, but God, I don't know. That console is so amazing. Like, cause I had amazing single player experiences. I had like amazing party game experiences. Like, it kind of nailed it.
And you had such great SOCOM parties.
Yeah.
You had great online experiences.
SOCOM, yeah.
Me and Poe bought SOCOM and the damn adapter and the headset. We played like once. I'm like, I can't figure this out. I don't know.
It was so complicated. You had to unscrew the thing on the back of the PS2 and holy shit.
Those were the days. Mm. Case. PS2 memories.
PS2, I would say San Andreas.
Yes.
I mean, I can't even tell you how many hours I've logged playing that. The last game that I actually beat on PlayStation 2 was God of War 2. So that's probably like my last big memory of PlayStation 2. So it's been a while since I've spent time with
it's
the
been a while.
Black Box.
Since I could see. For me, it was, you know, in the PlayStation conversation, I talked a lot about the launch and camping out for it. That's for sure a cherished memory. But, you know, I bought it obviously at launch 2000 and then took it to college in 2001. And so that was like, that was still rare to see people with PlayStation 2s. So like in my dorm room, I think on the floor, I was like one of the only PlayStation 2s and the other was just a pothead. So he never had it. So I had my door open all the time. And so like people would come in, and like when GTA came out, people would just come in and sit on my floor while I played GTA, and we would drive around and listen to Chatterbox. That's all they wanted to hear was Chatterbox or Run Over a Hooker or whatever. But then when I came back, I remember in our hall, me and my friend were big SmackDown fans. And so like we actually bonded when I was going to class one day and I left my room and I heard the SmackDown 2 music coming from his room. I'd never met him and I ran into his room. I was like, you play SmackDown? I play SmackDown! Ah! Like, all right, cool. And so when
he's like, who the hell are you?
Yeah, when Just Bring It came out, SmackDown Just Bring It, the first PlayStation 2 version of the SmackDown series, I brought that back in like... Hatch dormitory at Mizzou shut down. Like everyone came in there. We had this piece of loose leaf paper that had everyone's like records against each other. Like we had all these like complicated things drawn up. Those were the days.
Those were the days. It was simpler then.
Yeah.
Also, that was a generation I think more than any other where I was splitting my time between a lot of different consoles. Because I was playing the game I played the most that generation is Rainbow Six 3 on Xbox, I played the shit out of that game. So, and GameCube had a lot of great exclusives, too. It was before these online ecosystems kind of started to separate people and kind of elicit playing more one console because you want to get the trophies, you want to have the experience, you want to see what your friends are doing, all those kinds of things. It was kind of like in the you know, that era where Xbox was really the only console that was doing it. And I used to play with the guys here, Rainbow Six 3. I got a copy of it. I remember walking in Boston through the snow to get a copy. And I remember the first time I played Hillary and Jeremy, I played with Hillary Goldstein and Jeremy Dunham, and Hillary shot me in the back of the head in the first game that I played. And I was like, a sniper got me or something, but they were actually killing me. You know?
That's something Hillary
now,
did.
Another interesting PlayStation 2 story is that was the beginning of the DVD era. So I remember very clearly watching The Matrix like 5,000 times on PlayStation 2. And, you know, that was to DVDs what the PlayStation 1 was to CDs, and sort of that cultural jump to be able to have that. And even showing my parents, I remember the first time, like, hey, you can watch a movie and you can just jump right to a scene. Yep. You don't have to rewind it. And just thinking, wow, this
there's
is
these
like...
things called Easter eggs. Yeah. And if you can find them, they light up and give you some
commentaries. Yeah, yeah. It was just, you knew you sort of were at the beginning of this totally different thing.
Yeah, that was, I mean, that for sure, like we talk about, you know, we make fun of the launch lineup a lot. You know, we're like, oh, Smuggler's Run and Madden and Silent Scope. And then the Oni bouncer. Came out. And like, we did wait for a long time for like Metal Gear, really, for, you know, and for GTA. Like,
yeah,
for
those, like, GTA and Onimusha and Metal Gear were like the games.
Yeah,
that
they
I
came
first...
like a year later or whatever. But it was all a DVD player. And that's what I was telling the story on this, that I worked a Walmart job, right? Because this is going to be my first purchase on my own. Like, so I worked at Walmart for a summer and told my mom straight up when I got the job, I'm like, I'm putting money aside, and I showed her what the figure for the PlayStation was and all the stuff I was going to buy. I'm like, this is what's happening with some of this money. She's like, all right. So I'd worked there forever, and I hated Walmart so much that when I would leave Walmart, I would go to Suncoast Video or Best Buy or whatever, and I would go in and buy every week or so, I'd buy a DVD, and then I would just put it on my shelf and stare at it from summer to October when I could finally play it on my PlayStation 3. Like, I finally cracked it that day, October 27th, when I came home and was ready to play.
Yeah, I think my first DVD was Mallrats, if I remember correctly. Yeah. And I just remember it blew my mind that there was so much on it that I could do.
Yeah, exactly. I was such a Mallrats fan, all the commentaries. Ben Affleck from Phantoms.
DVDs were funny because I have like a great DVD collection from like late 2000 until like 2003. Because I used to buy, I had like Road Trip and shit like that. You know,
everyone has Road Trip.
Like, you know, and Signs and all these weird. And I was like, why am I buying all these DVDs? Now they just sit in a box. Yep.
Yeah, I keep talking about going to Selma. Damon did it a few years ago, and I should have done it with him because he went to Amoeba and traded in all his DVDs and got like $200.
Right before I left New York, I sold my entire like gigantic DVD collection.
It's one of those things. Now it's just now I refuse. I don't want it. I want everything digitally. I want everything just on the go.
And they're kind of worthless now too. Like we were on eBay just looking at stuff, and we thought, oh, we have all these old, like we've got The Sopranos, we've got Battlestar Galactica, all these different things that, you know, it's just all on Netflix now. And you try and sell them on eBay, and they're you know, $5 for what you would have previously spent, you know, $50 on.
Yeah, those box sets were expensive.
Those HBO ones especially. Like, I remember every HBO show came out at $100, and I was like, oh, do I really want season 6.5 of The Sopranos, the second part?
It's such a weird, it's been such a weird shift to this digital infrastructure and everything. Like, the other day I tweeted about how I saw Zod from Smallville in some dumb show I was watching, and that made me want to go watch Smallville from start to back. And Joey Esposito, and I have, as people know, because I lost that bet with Clements, I have the entire box set of Smallville on my thing there. And Joey Esposito tweeted, I keep waiting for them to add it to Netflix. And I went, oh my God, can you imagine? And then I was like, because I'm too lazy to get up and get the DVD and put it in the system and then switch it out when I want to play games.
Yeah, that enormous box of discs.
Tom Welling just staring at us every day. I love it. It makes me so happy. Jake writes in to beyond@IGN.com, just like you can and should, and says Sony recently said that's not a Gregism, that Sony recently said that they are just now stopping production shipping of the PlayStation 2 in Japan. Do you think the PlayStation 3 or any other current gen system for that matter will enjoy a similarly long life cycle?
Well, yes. That's Sony's whole thing, right? They want every. They said even the Vita is going to have their 10-year life cycle.
Yeah, they always talk about these 10-year life cycle. I mean, to their credit, they did it with PS2 for sure.
Yeah.
And beyond that. But, I mean, PlayStation 3 only has, what, 4 more years to
go? Yeah, we say it like, 10 years is so long. Yeah, you're almost there, right? Yeah.
Three now.
Yeah,
it's 2013.
Like, it's crazy. I mean, the one thing we talked about in the PlayStation conversation, which is I think important to understand with PS2, in a sense, is that the burgeoning economies of like certain countries supported PS2 long after a lot of people stopped playing it or whatever. And we talked about South America. Like, Sony's got like a huge presence down there now that they didn't have during the PS2 era, and so a lot of things were coming to those kinds of countries late. And I'm not sure that kind of you'll have that kind of sustained growth with PlayStation 3.
Yeah.
Especially because we're probably a month or two away, for PS4.
It's one of those things. If you weren't into video games, you're too young to remember. Like, when new consoles launched, the old consoles supported still for like a year, especially on like cross platform stuff where there's like 4 versions of Madden. You don't need, there's going to be this Wii U one. There's going to be PS2. Then there's PS3, and then there'll be this Orbis one. They're going to be all over the map, have different features and stuff as people try to get a hang of the system and what's happening. And then of course, it's a business, obviously. These publishers are putting out games trying to make money, so they're going where there's an install base. That's why we, always talk about, when in the beginning, if you ported something to PS3 and it didn't work, nobody cared because it worked on the system that everybody had. So why care about this minority?
Yeah, and I think that this generation, the overlap with PS2 and PS3 reminded me most of NES and SNES because, SNES came out in 91 or whatever, but then, Mega Man 5, Mega Man 6 still came out on NES, Yoshi's Cookie, like all these games that were actually pretty big came out like... games were released on NES until 1994, so and even later than that, if you're talking about third-party like religious games and things of this nature.
Yeah, I think that overlap period will only get bigger too, because like, I mean, you saw this gen, like you had like your Twilight Princess was on both, and you had, what was it, Call of Duty 2 was on Xbox and on Xbox 360, and I think you'll definitely see all that again.
I think it's fair to say though that the PlayStation 2 is very unique in that it's lasted as long as it has. That there was crossover with NES to Super NES, but there really hasn't been anything like this where the PlayStation, something like the PlayStation 2, has endured for such a long time.
Yeah,
sure. I think even, wasn't it NBA 2K13, like the most recent one, also had a PS2 version. It was maybe 12.
Really,
I think
not 13.
Maybe it was
12. On PSP too.
Exactly.
Before the break, we were talking about a PS2 game that was coming out. What was it? I don't remember what it was.
One of the sports games.
Yeah, I mean, this year, for instance, the show, which is internally developed, this is the first year they didn't put it on PS2 because they were saying that they were still selling like 100 or 150,000 units on PS2 as of like 2011.
Because when the 360 got announced during the first year, games came out on both platforms, but I think it, like, 2006 was the last year that Madden came out for Xbox 360, and then so within that first year everything was gone, no more Xbox. So
I think it's smart to abandon the old console personally, but
absolutely. Yeah, I mean, PSP.
Yeah, well,
that was abandoned a long time ago.
Nintendo was doing that with DS too. Like, the most recent Pokemon came out on regular DS from 2004, which is just crazy to think about. But yeah, I mean, I think you'll still see support for PS3 for a while, to answer the original question. Like, I think that'll definitely last for at least another year or two.
Third party support.
Yeah. First party, I think, is definitely going to...
I think The Last of Us will be the last first party game, probably. Yeah.
Last huge one. There'll be something stupid.
Oh, like from like London or Cambridge.
Yeah,
or
so there'll be another Move Party Collection. Wonder
yeah, that's
too.
True. Yeah, well, that's
Wonder
true.
Wonder Book, yeah. Wonder Book actually is its own platform. And it's selling like hotcakes, I'm sure, so...
I don't know about that.
I saw one in the wild the other day.
Oh, really?
I was at Target, and it was just it wasn't even behind, like, they have games behind glass with the locks. This was just like sitting on a countertop. It was just a Wonder Book, the whole thing. I just picked it up. I'm like, oh, neat. Put it down.
It exists. It's real. Hopefully, we'll hear more about it at E3.
Colin Campbell needs to do something about it. He was tweeting about it, playing with his kids.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's fine. I mean, I'm sure it's fine. It's just not our thing.
Yeah.
Also, when Casey mentioned 2013 earlier, I just realized the rent check I wrote a couple hours ago said 2012 on it.
Nice.
That's going to happen for the next
Bounce
week or so.
City. Yeah.
All right. Should we move on?
Yeah, what do you got for me on Roper Report?
Let's do Tomb Raider multiplayer. This story is by Casey Lynch. It says, Square Enix's upcoming Tomb Raider game will feature multiplayer, confirmed Crystal Dynamics global brand manager Carl Stewart today via Twitter. No other details were given, only that the upcoming issue of official Xbox magazine will have details on, quote, new modes and info on when you'll be on who you'll be playing as. I'm sorry, end quote. So yeah, we went, Casey and I and a few other people were talking about it on Twitter a little bit during the break. We can't help but chime in even during vacation about the gaming news. Yeah, Casey, I know you're kind of taking a wait and see approach to the Tomb Raider, as I think we all should, and as opposed to kind of writing it off immediately or anything like that.
Well, yeah, so I saw Carl Stewart, who's one of the brand directors on the Tomb Raider franchise, tweeted out and say, yes, it's true, multiplayer's coming. And so I wrote up the story, I tweeted it, and there was this sort of immediate backlash where all of a sudden it just seemed like fair game to hate on Tomb Raider. And we don't really have any details. We don't know if it's going to be sort of your standard kind of cut and paste deathmatch, capture the Laura or whatever it might be, I don't know, sort of thing. Or who knows what they have in mind. I mean, do you remember the response to Assassin's Creed multiplayer, say, for instance, and how great it was when Brotherhood came out and how surprised I think everybody was? So, I mean, yeah, we're actually going to be going down to Crystal Dynamics later this week to check it out and get some hands-on time with it. And I believe that our preview and some new video will go live next week. So until we know what it is, I don't think it's really fair for us to all of a sudden say, hey, well, I'm going to cancel my pre-order or I hate Tomb Raider or something.
Yeah, it was an interesting, in a way, disheartening day of that. Because it was one of those things, I saw the tweet from Carl and then I saw your story and I clicked on it for more details and there weren't any. I was like, okay, so that's all we know. Great. And it was like, for me, that was where it ended. It's like, what do I want to say? I don't know what I'm getting into. And I held back on tweeting about it and getting involved. It was just, for me, the thing was that Tomb Raider looks awesome. Like, everything we've seen for Tomb Raider looks awesome. I can't wait for that game. So why wouldn't I trust them with this? You know what I mean? It was one of those things where when Naughty Dog was like, oh, we're going to do Uncharted multiplayer, it's like, all right, cool. You guys know what you're doing. Now, in the same breath, I guess, but it's when you see it that you're allowed to hate it, I think. When we saw Dead Space, I was like, this is bad. This is not in the review. I was like, you know, this doesn't work or whatever. And same thing for when we first saw Mass Effect and it was barely running or whatever.
Yeah, Mass Effect was running like trash.
And although, then when you changed your tune when you reviewed it.
Yeah, but, yeah. I mean, I think it's fair. I mean, what I said on Twitter, and I think it's apt, is that there's an argument always about resources in development versus like the end product and what you get. And even though, you know, we get these robust titles like Uncharted 2, which was an amazing game that also included multiplayer, I can't help but wonder, and the same thing with Tomb Raider, even if different teams are doing it, even if they outsource it, like some teams do to just totally different studios, yeah, yeah, like they did, I think, with BioShock 2, right?
Yep.
That you can't help but wonder, it's like, okay, a single player game like Tomb Raider, that's a single player game to me. You know, except for maybe, what was it, Underworld, I guess, had multiplayer, right? Something like that.
No,
Guardians of Light.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, to me, it's like, would I rather have a multiplayer mode? That's great. Totally fine. Not really into multiplayer games personally. So I'm probably not going to play it even if it's good. Or would I rather have 2 more hours of a campaign? Or just a sharper, better campaign? A 9.5 instead of a 9.0? I think those are arguments that are reasonable to make when resources are everything and development teams are under the gun. And so I can't help but wonder, you know, what splitting of your resources to get multiplayer in, really, like we were talking about, to stop people from selling your game back and to keep you engaged so you buy DLC and stuff like that, which is why they're doing it. More power to them. But I want the single player portion of the game. Like you said, Uncharted 2 and Uncharted 3 had really fun multiplayer, but I don't care about it. You know? Like, yeah. And I would rather, I like the single player game. So I just want more of that. And the same thing with Mass Effect 3, which was surprising. It reminded me a lot of, you know, when we all sat down and played Gears of War 3, and that was a great game. I mean, Horde mode was awesome in that game. And Mass Effect 3 was kind of similar in a sense, not quite as deep, I don't think. It was fun, but I didn't want to play it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's like, I would rather have 5 more hours of campaign. So I think that that is a reasonable argument. But we can't judge the multiplayer itself.
But I always feel like we're being so... It's one of those things where I think... I've never heard a developer say that's the problem. You know what I mean? Like, I think we look at it from as outsiders who don't know how to make games. And it seems black and white to us that it's, you know, A minus B equals C or whatever. And I don't know if that's really what the resource trade-off is. I mean, and I don't know either way. I'm not saying you're wrong.
In my eyes, it's just never a bad thing to have that option, right? Because as much as you're not interested in it, there are people who are. Like, oh God, Bioshock 2's multiplayer did nothing for me, but there are people who loved it and played it religiously. And, you know, like you were saying, you know, the Assassin's Creed multiplayer is outsourced. That's all Ubisoft, Annecy, or whatever, even for 3, was doing that separately. So it's like, it doesn't take away in those cases. I think Crystal Dynamics, we don't know. We don't know if there's a separate team doing the multiplayer or if maybe
Carl's
they did
doing it
take
all
it
by
away.
Himself.
Yeah, probably. He's just using the old
It's tic-tac-toe.
Yeah.
Yeah, so our story on the Tomb Raider multiplayer is going to go live next week, but we do know some details. We're pretty sure that it is a separate team, and it's something that was planned from the beginning. So when we're talking about like splitting resources, essentially what we're talking about is sort of a mix of time and money. We're not necessarily talking about the team that's down in Redwood saying, okay, you know, 15 of you guys need to stop working on single player and go work on a multiplayer suite. I think that the fairer question to ask instead of is it going to be any good is why are they doing this? And I think that I would like to hear that from the developer.
Sure.
And, you know, those are the questions that we're going to ask when we see it. You know, and one would hope that there has to be some motivation to say we think Tomb Raider as a single player product is going to be amazing, but we decided, having talked about it and brainstormed and put all of our brains together, that this is going to be, you know, something that the game has to have. Meaning, if it shipped without this, it would be a lesser product. If that's the case, and that's what they believe in, and that's what they're going to be putting out, then I'm interested in seeing it. Where I think the skepticism comes from is we've all seen examples where that isn't the case. Where instead there's you know, you play a game like Fear. When Fear first came out, it was this stark, visceral single-player experience. And then all of a sudden now it's, you know, becomes this sort of multiplayer shooter kind of rote experience. And maybe Fear's not the best example, but there's so many games where...
Superman 64.
Not that one either.
They didn't need multiplayer. Why am I in a bunch of spaceships?
They didn't need green fog. You know, where you just – you feel like, okay, I'm never going to touch this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Right. And then you see that effect too a month after the game comes out and you log into a server and you can't even get a match because people just aren't playing it.
And that's why it's annoying when they make like a trophy for that. It's like, oh, play 10 multiplayer rounds. You can't even connect to anybody anymore.
But, I mean, the idea that there's separate teams working on these, I mean, that's pretty much standard practice now. I mean, Bioshock 2, the multiplayer is handled by Digital Extremes. Yep. And even like Halo 4, a lot of the multiplayer stuff is handled by Max Hoberman and his team at Certain Affinity. So, I mean, you've got AAA games that you know, are known for their multiplayer experience where they have stuff being farmed out. Same thing with Call of Duty. You've got multiple teams working on this stuff. So it always is a question of resources. The other side of it, too, is for the game itself to be successful, it just has that much more it has to make up. If they spend X amount extra on multiplayer, they're going to have to bring in that much more for it to, you know, be in the black and possibly get a sequel.
Yeah, I think that's that risk. That's that fine line that they're walking, you know, when the publisher's like, we really want you guys to add multiplayer, you know, because it has X percentage potential to make that much more. Is that worth offsetting that much extra cost put into that multiplayer mode? Man, it's crazy to think, like, I wonder if it truly does prevent people from trading in those games. Like, do you really think Bioshock 2 wasn't traded in because of that multiplayer mode, or do you think it would have been better without it?
Bioshock 2? No, I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think
But, I mean, you're talking about, I don't think it's a Band-Aid, right? Like, they're just trying to keep you from trading it in that first month so that when you go to buy the game, there's only new copies. You
figure
that's all these things are, or I shouldn't say all, you know, these things are, but it's one of the, you know, that's what they're looking at as far as margins of error, right? All those games are probably going to get traded in eventually, right? Everyone will trade in their games, ever. That's an eventuality. We know that. But it's one of the, you know, you just need to stop it and you need to have that guy, you want this new, we have it used for $5 less. Well,
yeah, when Bioshock 2 came out, even Dead Space 2, I don't even know if that was so much the thing as much as it is nowadays. I mean, look at Spartan Ops with Halo, and sorry, I know this PlayStation.
No, that's fine.
But, you know.
Trust me, you should hear some of the shit Clement's talking about.
Guild Wars and Diablo.
Or K-pop and his sorry. Laundry.
Sorry, guys. Like Halo 2 and their idea of Spartan Ops and this new content that comes out every single week. I mean, that seems to me a more aggressive way to try and get people to hold on to a disc as opposed to a potential throwaway multiplayer.
And for that, and like that, I mean, I enjoyed Halo 4. And I don't. It's one of those things that makes me want to hold on to my copy. Like I think that's an awesome idea. That when you're like, that's the thing that I would rather them do. Spartan Ops is, you know, for sure every time a new story entry. That's what I want. I wish that Uncharted, if Uncharted's reasoning for multiplayer, not above all, but was one of them. Yeah, we want people from keep them from trading in. I would much rather than them give me every 6 months 2-hour Sully story that I'm just going through and playing as Sully. Well, I would much rather have that.
That's what's so funny about Bioshock 2, because Minerva's Den is probably the best standalone Bioshock story that's ever been released, and it's like this incredible piece of DLC. But like, it's funny that that came later, when like that's so much more appealing to me than the multiplayer mode that it shipped with.
Yeah,
and that may very well be what this multiplayer is with Tomb Raider. It may be this kind of episodic content.
That'd be awesome.
Don't know.
That'd be awesome.
And that's where I think
stories.
You know, when we were talking on Twitter, you and I, Colin, and a bunch of the other guys, it was a little bit like, guys, you know, let's just find out what it is. I mean, it could be co-op. It could be like a crazy Tomb Raider MOBA. I have no idea. Yeah. It could be total shit too. As well. So, I don't know. I mean, we'll see.
Yeah.
When I think back to like GTA 4, the multiplayer for me did nothing for me. And then when I sat down and played it, I was like, this is crazy. Like having that entire open world to play. But that's not what kept me coming back to that game.
But yeah, for me, it was like they promised episodes from, not episodes from Liberty, but they promised, you know, the motorcycle and they promised Gate Tony. Yeah, it was like, yes. And even Dead Space did that, where they're like, you know, we're going to have all this multiplayer, yada, 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 but there's going to be more story content down there. That's all I ever want from stuff like that. If it's a great game.
It's funny how much Dead story Space. DLC will pull me back in. You
Arkham
know, like,
City.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I went back to Arkham City to play the Harley Quinn stuff, yeah.
I think Rockstar nailed it, obviously, with Undead Nightmare. Like, that was an awesome idea. Yes, give me more. If you, and just promise that. At launch, be like, in six months or a year, we're going to put out this, you know, X, Y, and Z, and it'll be rad.
Yep, they did that with Eleanor as well. And to be fair, with Rockstar, I mean, Eleanor was a
little madness,
but still a good idea.
Yeah, but... like with GTA 4, I mean, nobody at that point, if you remember back then, nobody had played a multiplayer GTA game like that. And so there were so many people that were skeptical, like, oh, this is total BS. And I mean, while it didn't do like Call of Duty numbers, I mean, people
we still talk about it. Yeah.
But the problem of that, and the same thing with Red Dead.
The weird thing is that like Damon and I talk about it on GameScoop a lot, but we always talk about literally like our only two nights with it. Of where it was like, hey, have you ever flown the helicopter? No. You're flying the helicopter and you get everybody would crash it on their first time. But like we did the bank robbery mission.
Steer it.
You did the bank robbery mission or whatever, and then you were just done. It was like, all right, cool, see ya. Like that there's such a weird balancing act, or maybe it's because we're old. I sometimes wonder if it's because we're old. Like people who grow up on multiplayer games like Call of Duty always seem so, oh yeah, I'll jump in and I'll do this and I'll play forever. You know what I mean? They will literally sit there and play forever. Whereas we seem to be like, all right, cool, this is all right. I'm done.
Yeah, I mean, I always feel like I've had, I don't want to say an aversion, but just a preference to playing like with other people, even when I was young, just because it was like when you played Mario or something, Super Mario World, like one of the great games of all time. Be like, hey, let's play as Luigi, play as Mario. You can just go home and play it as Mario, and I'll just go home and play it as Mario, and then we can just play it, like, you know, like, so I've always kind of been like, to me, gaming,
like to play
Colin, little Colin with his arms crossed and Magnet on his head.
to me, it was always like, you know, I had like, you know, I liked playing outside with I played hockey, you know, like all the, you know, and then I play go in the woods and play Red Dawn and throw pine, you know, pine cone grenades. But yeah, so I feel like it's something that's derived from childhood for me, where it's just like I like playing games by myself, and so that's always going to be, I guess, my preference, you know. And when I see something like that threatens my single player world view, you know, then I start to get threatened.
So you wouldn't be in favor of like Fallout or Elder Scrolls going like co-op multiplayer or anything like that?
Oh no. I mean, I like the option. I mean, what we always talk about is Greg and I is Dead Space 3, like, and like how, you know, I just don't understand the move to co-op, but as long as they preserve the single player mode as if you want to play it by yourself. In other words, I don't want to be pigeonholed and having to play something the way I don't want to play it, for a product that I expect that I can play it the way I want to play it. Of course, it's their game and they can do what they want with it. I'm not going to tell them otherwise. But
a Fallout game with other people and it gets me so excited, especially.
Really?
But it gets me excited from DC Universe Online, where you can play through the whole thing by yourself if you want. But then if you run into something that's really hard, you run into a mutant Goliath or whatever, you know, out in the wasteland, and you need help, I can ask you to come join me, or I see other people fighting and join in with them.
That's the Borderlands formula. Yeah, like absolutely. I think Borderlands proves, you know, I know a lot of people just did not like it single player. Like I know Mitch hated it single player, loved it multiplayer. Like it was totally separate for him. But like for me, that proved that is the proof of concept to me. That is like how that can work beautifully, that you can play. Like I'm like well over 100 hours into Borderlands, and probably like 75% of that I spent alone. But when I wanted to be playing with people, it was awesome. So like I think you have it both ways. But for me, it's like it's always been two very separate things. Like I want to play Fallout by myself, but like, oh my god, in college, Call of Duty 4, when that came out, that was the only like Modern Warfare game where I like prestige, and I just kept playing. I probably sunk like 100 hours just into that multiplayer alone. And you know, I think, like you were saying, maybe it is just that we're older now that I'm not really doing that with pure multiplayer anymore. Mm-hmm. But like, I think when a game does it right, it can keep you coming back. And I think that's what they're all hoping they do when they add these multiplayer modes. They're hoping they can hook you into, like, all I want to play is Dead Space 2 because I love all these 40 Isaacs running around. Like, I think that's, like, what they're hoping for is that that'll be, like, your thing. And I think no one has perfected it in that Call of Duty way, but maybe Tomb Raider will be the game.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Speaking of Call of Duty, number three.
Good transition.
Uh-oh. Yes. Black Ops 2 Revolution DLC details. This story is by our English friend, Daniel Krupa. It says, the first bit of DLC for Call of Duty Black Ops 2 has been leaked online. The expansion is titled Revolution. And if the leaked promotional images via MP First, that's a website, are to be believed, it will contain four new multiplayer maps and one new map for the Zombies mode. The new MP maps are called Hydro, Downhill, Grind, and Mirage, while the Zombies map is named Die Rise. And be able to run around levels wielding the new Peacekeeper submachine gun. Another leaked image states that the Revolution expansion will come to Xbox 360 on Tuesday, the 29th of January. Tuesday, 29th January. I don't like that European dating system. It's confusing. I don't like that. It's too confusing. And will be exclusive for a limited amount of time. So PS3 gamers obviously have to wait, as we do for all of Call of Duty maps.
I believe it's 30 days. I believe it's D3. I think they're all...
At least it won't be 2 years like it is for Skyrim DLC. yeah, so that's cool. I haven't played Black Ops 2 yet.
It's really good.
I have no doubt about that. I love Call of Duty games. So like,
see, well, I mean, you know that I don't. Like, you know, usually I put in the single player campaign and get a few hours in. I'm like, all right, I've seen enough. And this was the one that I sat there and beat on that one Saturday where I was just like, this is awesome. This is a great movie, and I like these characters. And Michael Rooker is awesome.
Yeah, I don't play. Those are games I don't play online either.
You like Treyarch specifically too, right, Colin?
Yeah, I like Treyarch better than I like Treyarch games a lot. The one thing that I'm you know. Going back to the multiplayer thing about how I want to play by myself, even with what was it, Spec Ops, isn't that what the mode's called in Call of Duty? The Call of Duty 4 was the first one with that, or no, Call of Duty
Modern Warfare 2,
I think, right? Yeah. I did all of the multiplayer missions by myself, except for the ones like
the breach ones that you have to do. Yeah,
there's two specifically that you have to do with someone else. Like, oh my god, I would toil over these things because they were not meant to be played by yourself. Like, I would. Like, I would...
God forbid you find somebody to play with.
It would take me, like, a day to do, like, a map. I'd be, like, crawling slowly through, like, the snow and, like...
It's, like, easy.
I had to, like, figure out exactly what to do.
Those missions were really fun, too, with two people.
Yeah, that was the best part.
I think they were fun by myself, but...
Getting 3 stars in those missions, like, playing them on, like, Veteran or whatever it was so fun. Oh, man.
I've been trying to play Call of Duty on Vita a little bit, so still trying to get those stars.
Still gonna do it, yeah.
That's a rough one.
I beat, like, two of them on Veteran, I think.
You talked about our British friend there. Mm-hmm. We had another British friend writing to Beyond here. This is from Alex Simmons over in the IGN UK office. Hey, Greg. Someone sent in a load of books for Podcast Beyond. See picture. No idea why. What do you want me to do with them? So we want to give a shout out to whoever sent us like 8 copies of Solascape Rest.
I don't know what that is.
I don't either. I don't know much about it, but thank you for the books.
Yeah,
I told Alex to either, if it was easy to send them to us, or just give them away to his fans, then we'll get the Kindle version.
Yeah, we have lots of fans over in the England that will be happy to read a book.
Yeah.
Number 4, this is an interesting story. I mean, I think it was a kind of a foregone conclusion, but I didn't expect that it was going to happen this soon. Fezgal's multi-platform in 2013, also written by our British friend Daniel Krupa. Highly acclaimed XBLA game Fez will be heading to other platforms in 2013. The man behind the mind-warping puzzler Phil Fish announced the news in a New Year's message on Polytron's website. In a reflective post, Fish looks back on the release of the game, but looking ahead, he wrote, quote, but what now? 2013 is going to be an interesting one, too. For one, Fez will finally be ported to other platforms. Yes, I've heard you, dozens of people emailing me every day telling me how much of an idiot I am for not porting Fez to everything, end quote. Fish doesn't specify what platforms, but expected to be heading to PC, PlayStation 3, and perhaps mobile and handheld devices, too. I would assume PS3 and PC are safe bets.
Yeah.
Maybe Wii U.
Dude, it would be so good on Vita with the back touch, because the whole thing in Fez is that you're, like, spinning the world around. Like, while I was playing it, I was telling everybody how smart, like, it's the one time I've ever kind of wanted that gimmicky back touch feature, because it would work perfectly for it.
Yeah.
Fez is really great. I'll happily play it again for trophies if they put it on a PS3 or Vita.
So now the question is, I just downloaded it to my 360. Do I just not even touch it? Not even worry about it.
No, absolutely play
it now. Yeah. Yeah.
How long is it? I don't want to put in the hours on it. And then
depends on how much you want to play. I mean,
you're a crazy person, you can spend a lot of time with that game.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, you can play it for 5 to 10 hours and really get the gist of it and have a great time, and then decide how far you want to go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Also, while we're on the Phil email here, or talking about Phil Fish. Mm. Watch Indie Game the Movie. It's on Netflix on demand. Mm. Awesome.
Yeah, he's one of the people in it. Yeah.
Also,
and his story is just, gut wrenching as you watch him.
Another
his great facial hair.
Yeah, he does.
I was going to say another good one is Jiro Dreams of Sushi, which we watched.
Yes.
We did watch it together.
What's it called?
Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
I'm writing this down.
Yeah, it's really good. Casey, you'll like it. It's all about the IGN philosophy.
It is. It is very much about the IGN philosophy.
Like wings and beer?
No. Like, you know, living to work.
Yeah.
No, never being really able to turn it off. Loving what you do.
Yeah, it was great.
Letting it break you. Ruin your relationships with family.
We watched it on December 26th after the great turkey fry of 2012.
It was the next day we watched it.
Yeah. And I remember you put it on. I just sat down on the couch. I'm going to go play Ni No Kuni. I just want to see what this is. And then I just watched the entire thing because it was riveting.
Yeah, we were. Even Mike Mitchell just sat down and watched.
Like,
we were
into it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, shit. I don't know. It was about sushi. The final story is THQ delisted from NASDAQ Stock Exchange by our friend Andrew Goldfarb. THQ is no longer traded on the NASDAQ Stock Exchange following its bankruptcy filing in December. THQ stock has fallen to 23 cents per share as of this writing, and will be represented by new stock symbol THQIQ. THQ stock will now be traded OTC, over the counter.
You can pick it up at Walgreens.
As explained by Gavin Sutra, that means THQ stock is not listed on an exchange and is instead traded over the telephone and electronically rather than on a physical trading floor, end quote. THQ previously enacted a reverse split of its stock to avoid being delisted by NASDAQ, which requires a minimum share price of $1. It won't be a concern for long, though, as given THQ's new deal with Clear Lake Capital Group, it will soon become a private company and its stock will no longer be traded. Most interested to see what happens with this company, because I feel like they could absolutely rebound if they kept all of their resources and assets together, but I don't think that that's actually going to happen. So we will see. Because they own, I mean, dude, Saints Row itself is worth a fortune and Volition is worth a fortune. So if you could build something around them, plus Homefront sold like $3.5 million. They own like all of these random, they ceased a lot of them, but the licenses that they own,
the Blob.
The Blob was cool.
Yeah. That's the thing though. They jumped ship on so many of their licensing things.
Yeah, like, I don't know if they own anymore. They're still the WWE people.
For now, yeah, they have WWE, but WWE issued this really weird statement right around when THQ went bankrupt, and there were rumors that Vince McMahon is like super upset with them and that they owe him $50 million or something for the WWE license. And I mean, THQ is a really complicated company right now, and like because the court hasn't even approved that bankruptcy deal that they have. Like, I mean, all that stuff with Clear Lake has to go through a bunch of, like, they have to leave it open for competing bidders, and that's why all that speculation about Ubisoft potentially buying their properties is up. But I mean, everything THQ has, right? Like that Homefront deal they have to publish that, like Homefront 1 did sell really well, but will people come back for the sequel? Because a lot of people bought that game and then seemed to get burnt out on it. So it's like, I don't know. I mean, I think South Park and Metro and some of these games they have coming out could do well, but probably not well enough to keep them afloat on their own.
But if they have no stockholders to satisfy anymore and they keep it private just with an equity firm, then I think you start small again and grow until you can go public again if you want.
Yeah.
It's just like they have too many licenses and too many studios that are not bad studios to, like, it's that you draw shit, man. Like, and these licensed games, like, they ruined everything with like a few bad choices.
It feels like they've always been on that line, right? Of just like, they have some standouts, but most of the time it's just like, all right, these are good games. Okay. But then they take this one chance on you draw and put it out on PS3 and 360, and that's the end of that.
It has been fascinating to watch this whole thing, because this has just been basically since I started IGN. Like, this had, the UDraw stuff was just happening right then.
You're their curse.
I was their downfall.
If you leave, Danny Bilson will come back and fix everything.
Yeah, they've made some really big or taken some really big risks on very interesting things. Like, even if you think about Darksiders, I mean, they built this huge sort of brand and they put all this marketing, all these marketing resources behind that. I mean, it's by Vigil, like before Darksiders, like were people like knocking down the doors for a new game from Vigil. But on the flip side, you know, Metro looks great. Like you said, Company of Heroes 2 looks really great. I don't know if...
But these are all sounding like games that just don't sell.
Yeah,
well, that's the thing. I don't know if any one of these games is going to carry them, but I think all of them combined with Saints Row and with...
Is South Park a download or is it a disc?
No,
it's real.
Is it a disc?
Okay. Yeah.
But the thing about South Park is like they... I feel like South Park is the one that could go in that direction, like, because that's like a really hard thing to predict. I think South Park could do gangbusters, like if it's marketed right and if people catch onto it. But the thing is, like, that's spring 2013. Metro and Company of Heroes are, I think, February. Like, they're just going to get drowned by this sea of games coming out. Like, there's so many games coming out in the next 6 months that it's like, even in like optimal timing, THQ could maybe sell, you know, a few million copies of Metro at best, but like with all those other games coming out, I just can't imagine.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think these games are right up to snuff with some of the bigger games that are coming out within the next 60 days. So if they do come out,
sure.
I mean, the big thing, like, you know, in the article that you wrote when they initially fired Chapter 11, there's a quote where he talks about like MGM filed Chapter 11 2 years ago, right. And then this year they released Skyfall and then The Hobbit, and those are two of the biggest titles of 2012. That's the big problem. I think THQ doesn't have a Skyfall or a Hobbit, or something to that effect.
They don't have a guaranteed AAA, this is going to blow the doors off.
Well, I mean, and they do in Saints Row 4, but it's like that wasn't even going to be a thing. Like, they were originally going to release Enter the Dominatrix as a Saints Row 3 expansion. Their financial troubles kicked in. They were like, oh, now this is its own game. It's going to make us so much money. Please hurry up, Volition. And now it's like, like, when is that game going to come out? GTA is coming out in spring. Like, when can they release Saints Row 4 and have it do well?
Yeah.
Like, that's... The timing of that game especially is just crazy to think about, because even if they get it out before GTA, which, I mean, it hasn't even been formally announced, that's never going to happen.
That's not going to happen.
And if it comes out after GTA, like, I can't imagine it has a prayer.
I wouldn't say that. But again, like, is THQ going to hang their hat on Saints Row 4? I mean, Saints Row 4 will sell. But is it going to sell enough to get them out of this hole? Now, on the flip side, Chapter 11 is a total reorganization of their business. And, you know, they don't have stockholders at that point that they'll be beholden to. So they'll have a very different bottom line. I imagine once all this is done, that they're going to cut a lot off the top as well. So there's a chance that they could reposition themselves after this year and maybe even next year to make some smarter choices. But, you know, they've proven that they don't make the best choices. So I don't know, you know.
Yeah, I think you're right in the sense that when you don't have stockholders and you reset expectations and stop trying to be what is in essence like Ubisoft, like a sub EA but bigger than everyone else kind of publisher, which is what THQ was desperate to be, that when you reorganize and you cut things off the top and you have Chapter 11 and you're able to reorganize legally or whatever, then I think that they'll be fine, to be perfectly honest with you. But I just don't know like what they're going to look like. And the easy way out, especially if venture capitalists come in and start trying to split the company up, is it just Estella Studios. Yeah. And at least two of those studios people will buy. So.
I agree. I think they'll end up – like maybe they'll keep Relic and Volition or something. Like I can see them getting rid of at least a couple of those. And there's definitely interest. I mean, Ryan McCaffrey wrote an awesome article about who could potentially be interested in each of those studios. And it's actually pretty insightful.
But even if they survive, I mean, what's next? Like they have – they're sort of like a mid-tier publisher and that's even at this point smaller. And then, you know, what –
They have like four games in that document.
No, I know. Like, but like what does THQ look like in 2014 and 15? You know, they're going to have to make some intrinsic change or find a Tom Clancy or something that they can attach themselves to and do something big with.
So I think what they're really putting their chips in is Patrice Désilets, the Assassin's Creed guy. 1666 is his game. That's all we know about it. That is still a THQ thing. That's THQ Montreal. That's somewhere in the horizon. And I can see if that is like an Assassin's Creed type game, I can see them trying to really, really push that. Because of their stuff, I mean, they have that, the Turtle Rock game, they have that, and they have Homefront 2 just floating.
They have that Turtle Rock game.
Yeah, Homefront 2 better not be victimized by all this. That's all I have to say.
Yeah.
I thought Chaos was fine, but a super capable studio like Crytek working on it is very exciting.
Yeah, so. I mean, I think Crytek is probably going to be unaffected by this. I think the THQ-owned studios are the ones that would probably be, you know,
and somebody else will pick that up.
Yeah, but you have to understand that THQ has certainly not paid them everything that they're owed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, THQ also jumped out of the Itagaki thing. They jumped out of the Guillermo del Toro thing. Like, they're ditching some of those third-party deals they have. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see if they decide to go that way with Homefront and with some of the stuff they don't actually own. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's it for the news. Did you have anything that you wanted to discuss news that's newsworthy there?
No, that was the news stuff, I think.
Okay.
Clements is still gone. That's news. I heard he was coming back today, though.
Oh, is he?
He was tweeting about his luggage. So.
I think he's flying today, yeah.
Okay, that's good. That's good news.
He's got to get back to that PC, play some
Driver
StarCraft.
Update.
DirectX 10.
I'll tell you what, it's funny because, you know, we're the PlayStation team, Colin and I, we're the PlayStation podcast, all of us. We deal a lot with the whole like Xbox 360, PlayStation thing, back and forth. It's all fun and tongue in cheek. I never realized how pissy these PC gamers are. I talk a little bit of shit on Twitter, me and Mitch talk. I talk shit to Mitch, and it's, man, I just get barraged with, "You're doing it wrong. PC gaming so much easier." It's like, all right.
It's not easy.
And I'm gonna make a video next time I try to play something. And then we'll see.
When I went to play Street Fighter Cross Mega Man, it was like a big thing. It was like a to do.
I had to find you instructions to use the, and that was me playing Hotline Miami. It was Mitch and Anthony and Altano standing behind me at my desk like, well, what happens if you click that? And then that crashed the whole thing. Yeah. And I reinstalled it. I tried deleting it from Steam and then installing it again. And I plugged in the gamepad I was trying to use. And then it made me restart Windows. So I come back into it. And then it's like, oh, well, you don't have the most recent driver. I download that driver. And it makes me restart Windows again. And then it says, oh, like the driver you have is not compatible with Hotline Miami. Please download the previous version of the driver. And I'm like, Jesus Christ.
It's fun stuff.
Yeah. And don't bother writing in angry. I don't care what you play your games on. Enjoy your games. I hope whatever you choose to play on is what you play on and have a great time with. I know there's firmware for PlayStation 3 and updates for Xbox and yada, yada, yada. So don't bother trying to point out the fact that everything does this, but PC gaming is dumb and you're dumb if you do it. Colin, we were in cryo sleep for a while, but if I woke up right now and took this penny into a store and said, good sir, I have a penny.
Yeah.
What games can I buy with it? What games are new in your shop? Where can I find out what games are
new? You'd be sure that this penny is worthless. You go to the official list of upcoming PlayStation software on all three platforms by the IGN editors.
Boo 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 boo. Nice job.
There are no retail games this week, not surprisingly. Now, on the PlayStation blog, they have Jetpack Joyride listed as a new game, but that's not true because that came out like 3 weeks ago, so I don't know why that is.
But it's free.
Yeah, but that's a PlayStation Plus thing, so that's
total.
Oh, it's just free.
Free is must have been selling
right gangbusters.
You can get it for PS3 too, and PS3 Vita trophies.
They patch it with trophies. That sucks because we reviewed it and I bought it for like $4, so that's good.
Whoa.
Chronovolt's a new PS Vita game.
It's good. I'm enjoying it.
Is it?
I'm dead serious. It's free for PlayStation Plus. It's $5. I'm going to put up a video. I'm filming a video today about it and Jetpack Joyride. But for sure, I would spend $5 for this for the Vita. It's fun so far. I'm only like... not probably sub 10 minutes in, but it's got a great humor, really good cutscenes so far, goofiness. I mean, let's be clear about what you're doing. You're rolling a ball around. It's one of those games
like
of,
Marble Madness,
exactly, where you're trying to balance and collect stuff. But then it's got a little Prince of Persia in there. If you fall off, you can put both fingers on the Vita screen and it rewinds and you know eats up your Energon cubes or whatever the hell you're using.
The Energon cubes.
You can freeze things that are spinning. It seems like a fun puzzle.
It's a really weird sequel to Chrono Trigger, though. I just don't know what they're thinking.
They're taking the franchise in a new direction.
That's basically it. There's a bunch of new PlayStation Plus perks. NBA Jam on Fire Edition and Chrono Vault are both free. And discounts for Batman Arkham City, Infamous Festival of Blood, Assassin's Creed 2, Shadow of the Colossus, Bulletstorm, Sound Shapes, Tokyo Jungle, Skullgirls, and Touch My Katamari. And a permanent price change for everybody on Amy. Don't buy it. Don't buy it. Don't.
No.
You don't want anything to do with it.
Man, that was last year this time.
Yep.
It was the great Amy debacle.
Holy shit. What a game.
What did you give that, a 2?
A 2, yeah.
Fabian from Albuquerque writes in to beyond at IGN.com. He's about PlayStation Plus. I would love it if you guys kept a wiki like IGN does for the Borderlands 2 Golden Keys. I have a Vita now and would never like to miss a free game. Well, Fabian, thank you very much. The thing is, you know, PlayStation Plus switching stuff all the time. We do the news stories about what's new. Colin does an update of the PlayStation Store every Tuesday. You can always find that on the PlayStation pages here. But a wiki you can create, Fabian. Anyone can create a wiki, so go out and create wikis, just like Ryan Hess did for Borderlands 2, which when his Vita broke, we got him a new Vita, just because he's a good kid.
Because he built out that Virtue's Last Reward, and he's in my Borderlands Guild, which will be commencing in 13
days. I like how you keep making a big deal about this Borderlands Guild. It's you, Ryan, and Mike Mitchell, and then a fourth floater, whoever wants to get
it. It's a broke down guild.
We can never find a fourth person. I'm just trying to get the word
out there. I want to do it. I said I want
to
do it.
Get to level 50.
You said you'd help me, and then you never did.
Oh, well, now it's getting sad.
Yeah.
You're enjoying Gold Farm's store brand guild.
Yeah. We're good. We get t-shirts made. We're the only guild meeting in real life every day.
I am going to say that Ryan and I are really into it. And then Mike Mitchell, we text him at like 11. We're like, hey, do you want to come fight this boss?
And he's like, no, I'm not home yet. I'm still trying to get home from work.
See, it would be great if he did that. What he does is definitely, I'll be there in 15 minutes. And then 2 hours later, we're like, hey, you coming? And he's like, oh yeah, hold on, I'm just grabbing some food, I'll be right there. And then like an hour and a half later, he's like, you guys still on? And I get it the next morning, and I'm like, no.
Yeah, he's so funny like guilt. That. He's funny like that. His sense of time is a little off.
Yeah, just a bit.
Yeah,
just a bit. He's always like, I have to go do laundry first. And I'm like, it's 1 a.m. on a Tuesday. Where are you doing laundry?
This past weekend, his alarms aren't going off because he's on vacation, so you don't hear the and the cat using the bathroom in the morning and shit. There's like all these noises at once, this cacophony of sound. But the one thing he did have was his cell phone was on his nightstand. We share a wall or whatever. And it was like vibrating, and I like woke up and I'm like, what the fuck is that? And I like went, like, he keeps his room cracked so Chloe the cat can get in and out of his room. And I'm like, Mike, like over and over again for like a minute and a half, like louder and louder. And he's like, and then Simon's like, what? And I'm like, shut your phone off. Yeah, it's like he just sleeps through anything. It's just insane.
His cat, when I was sleeping on your couch, his cat at one point just came into that room and just scratched really hard on the side of the couch. And I was like, oh, and I just look at her. And she just stares at me for like 10 seconds and walks away. Yeah. So I was like, Jesus.
You don't fuck with Chloe.
Yeah.
Re DeVee on PSN writes into beyond@IGN.com and says, after winning IGN's Game of the Year, I'm very interested in playing Journey. But is it too late? 10 months later, is the zeitgeist over? Would my experience with the game be different to Ryan's when he reviewed it?
No, I don't think so.
No, definitely play it.
I mean, the only
it's an interesting question, but...
No. It goes back to the whole talk of when we're talking about picking Game of the Year or when I gave Uncharted a 10. I think when we set that expectation, you go in expecting this perfect experience, this amazing experience. I don't think Journey's going to disappoint you. I know very few people who have played Journey and been like, nah, this...
I know some. I mean, Journey's...
No, exist.
I mean, it's like that game that is different for every single person. I mean, I was talking with Shane Satterfield, who's the editor-in-chief at Game Trailers, and he just threw up his hands when I asked him about it. And he just said, oh, it's just a game where you run around in sand and chirp. And that's like all it was to him, you know?
Al Tano was not super into it either.
Altano's soul.
Stupid.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, to each his own, because I have obviously notoriously weird taste in games, Journey, man.
You played it late.
I played it.
The expectations were there. You already knew it was in the running for Game of the Year.
Yeah, I knew immediately that. The whole story is that I played Unfinished Swan and Journey back to back nights, and when I finished the Unfinished Swan, I was like, "This is the Game of the Year," to me. And then I went the next day, played Journey. I was like, "Nope, this is the Game of the Year." You know, so it was like it was a fantastic weekend for games.
Then
for
you played
me.
Super Hexagon.
Then I played Super. The next game I played The Walking Dead. So it was like a 10-day period where I played like the three best games of the year.
You set aside all the filet mignon. Mm-hmm. You just ate hamburger for all year long, and then you just had one.
Yeah, well, when I think back, it's like, what was I playing all year?
All of your stupid bullshit.
There was the 2 week period
where game. You're like, oh, this is great. Wow, what have I been missing?
There was that 2 week period where I platinumed Prototype 2, Crisis, and Assassin's Creed 2 in that 2 week period.
And yeah, but those aren't terrible games.
No. And then that was like the last time I remember. And then games for work. You gotta play. You know, get through some games.
Gotta play some games here.
But yeah, like I hadn't, because I think I told you, Casey, that I've abandoned the playing games for bad trophies or just for trophies, because there's just no time. Because
what?
Even
didn't
when
you
I,
just say you're playing Call of Duty on Vita for like stars or something?
Yeah, but it's also because I have nothing to play on Vita, and I'm saving Persona.
You keep saying
that.
Oh my
god, Persona.
Wait a second. You put off playing Persona 4 Golden to try and grind stars in Call of Duty.
I think I'm going to have the last laugh here.
You know the crazy guy in your neighborhood who's like canning peaches thinking the apocalypse is coming? That's Colin is ready for 2013 to be the most barren Vita landscape. So he
keeps saying early 2013. Guess what? It's early 2013. Yeah. Play Persona.
You should start Persona soon.
There's other games I want
to
play.
That's the answer to your question. I think you're in denial, buddy. You say, what was I playing? I constantly hear you and Greg saying, I got the platinum for da-da-da. Like, what? Why would you even spend? And I get it. Trust me. I used to be an achievement whore. But
it waxes and wanes. We're coming out of this period right now where we've been so game of the year, reviews, so much to do. That's going to continue. That's going to continue here onto the spring here as we get to.
I think the summer is going to be pretty empty. I think that's going to be a good time for us to get everything
catch up. But in answer to Zipty-Doo's question, it's not too late. It's not too late to play Journey.
All right. Good.
Also, in response to that, we had people tweeting at us this weekend like, "Hey, I'm going to play through Journey. Do you want to play through it with me?" And it's like it doesn't work.
That's
that
not
way.
How
like,
multiplayer
for,
works. Yeah,
like for somebody
who play Dark Souls together.
Well, I mean, there might be people who really don't know. Like, if it just Journey is totally random. Like, if you're going to play it, if you meet people, you might not meet anyone. You might meet 20 different people. It's totally random.
Yeah.
PSA.
Casey.
Yes, sir.
Over Christmas, over the break, the holidays, you played a lot of Persona. You started up. You dusted off the Vita.
I did.
Updated the firmware, I'm sure.
He blew it off like a dusty tomb.
Yeah.
It's got. How are you doing? Where are you at right now? Who do you love? Who's your girlfriend of choice?
I'm not too far into it. I think the people that I'm most curious about are Yumi. And I'm just finishing the first castle, so I know that that's not super far.
No.
But so I just went to the hospital with Yumi.
So you took a part-time job? Are you doing that, or are you doing?
I have two jobs. I'm an envelope folder.
Yeah, envelope folder is my
trade.
And
then I translate as well. Yep. So both things trade. I can do at my desk at night. It's like one little thing that you can do.
Yep.
This game sounds riveting.
But
dude, whenever we talk about Persona, it sounds like the worst game in the world. So I'm always so excited because I'll come home and read. I'll just sit down and like, in the game, mind you, not in real life. Yeah, I come home and I read a book about how to get my expression up.
It's crazy. So I went into the break with like a little less than 20 hours, and now I'm at 68 hours.
Oh my god!
And I'm just about to finish my first playthrough. I think I'm in February doing There's one dungeon that you only get if you max out a certain person's social link. So
I got Marie out of the Velvet Room.
Oh my god, I'm so in love with Marie.
Dude, she's awesome. She's cool. But I mean, the characters are all great. Yosuke's super fun and weird. Yeah. And Chie,
I love how like abrasive Chie is. She's just screaming at people. Yeah. Oh god, I'm so like I love those characters so much. And like even like Nanako sitting at home waiting for her dad to come home.
Oh, I know.
Like,
so and somebody tweeted at me, and I think they tweeted at both of us saying like,
"Are you two fighting again?"
Well, no, no. They said, "Do you see sort of the similarity between her and Clementine?"
Oh yeah,
and that was my one of the first thing that I thought.
My big thing was that I came off of reviewing. I mean, I don't, the timetable sync up here, right? Yeah, I came off of reviewing Walking Dead and being like, you know, everything The Walking Dead drags up in you emotionally, and then went into that game. And that was totally the connection I immediately had with her, is that I was, again, trying to look out for her, make her happy. Got her deadbeat dad who doesn't want to come home and take care of her.
Yeah, right? Like, I've seen him like four or five times in the game. Yeah. Now, did you guys play the PS2 version?
No.
I did, yeah. But I only did
it. Did you do the review?
No. Jeff did. And it was one of those things. I had been late to the party on Persona 3, I think. Or they came out close together. So it was one of those things for me that I love Persona 3. Loved Persona 3. So when I started Persona 4, it didn't click for me right away because I was kind of like, oh, these aren't the Persona 3 characters and yada, yada, yada. And then I got caught up in my own reviews.
In the face.
I do miss that. That was a much better way of summoning your personas, blowing your head off.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so I didn't either, and I feel like, not having had that experience, like I am loving it on Vita. Like I feel like it's perfect for Vita. I love the fact that I can just stop it and it just goes right to sleep, and I don't have to do anything to start it up again. I just boom and I'm right back into the game.
Right.
And it, you know, I mean, it doesn't have any, you know, back touch stuff, or it doesn't feel like it was necessarily made for handheld, but it to me is the perfect handheld type of a game.
Yeah. I mean, so
that's what I want out of a Vita game. I don't want it to have the game like if it appropriately uses the touch screen and all the other stuff, sure, but it's like I like the fact that developers are comfortable making it for just a powerful handheld with a pretty screen, basically. Like that's all you need to do.
All right, good. Persona 4, still good.
It's so good.
We get a lot of tweets of people that want you. I finally broke down and bought it because of you guys. And yeah. It's funny right now. More and more people are getting infected in the office. It's moving like a virus.
And
we were talking about today, and Megan Sullivan yelled out from database about it. They're like, yes. Colin, everyone is playing this.
I think the thing that would be appealing to you, in addition to the interesting story,
there's numbers in it.
I was going to say there's so much depth to it. Like pretty early on, I would say in the first 4 or 5 hours, you start to discover all these different systems. There's skill cards. There's obviously the personas. But there's just all of this depth. Like you trade or you register your personas into this compendium, and then you can actually you do the forecast thing, and then
you can fuse them. So it's like there's
standard, and then there's triple, and
And eventually you get, so you start out with normal and triangle. Eventually you get cross
or triangle,
and
sorry.
Pentagon and whatever else. Like there's like several different fusion methods, and like there are all these different types of personas. It's like Pokemon, basically. There's like different types of personas, and you can put two together, and they might make a different type. And then you're trying to complete this. Like one of the trophies is getting 100% in the compendium. I'm 84%. If you were curious,
I have no doubt that it's good. I'm just telling you, I'm gonna have the last laugh when you guys have nothing to play but Killzone Mercenary next year.
But guess what? We just won't be playing the Vita.
But I need something to do on my commute.
No, that's when I'll go back and I'll finally get my Plants vs. Zombies Platinum.
See, and that's the other thing. If you're committed to beating Persona, like you're only chipping away at it on your commute, really.
You
know what I'm playing on my commute right now?
Black Ops the Classified.
You want me to guess?
Yeah.
Is it a Vita game, or is this going to be some dumb iPhone thing?
It's a Vita game.
Okay, let me think. Casey, you can take a guess.
Think about
it. I don't want to say Vita. You were just talking about Declassified.
We received it.
Oh, right. Can I even talk about that?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
All right, you're playing Sly Cooper Thieves in Time.
Yeah.
Yeah. My plan over break was the Platinum DC Universe and then start, and then, I'm sorry, then do all the Sly collection and then get into, then be ready to. That
the whole Sly collection is like 25 hours at
least. I know. I'm still going to do that. It's still a plan is to go through the Sly collection.
Yeah, I've been playing Sly 4. I mean, all I did during break game-wise, all I did was play Ni No Kuni. I played a little bit of Sly. I'm only a few hours into the game.
I like that.
We can't talk about it really yet. But,
well, we can't. I mean, we did a live stream.
Yeah, that's true. And
I
so mean,
we've live streamed, I think, as much as you've played.
Yeah, probably, it's really fun. It's really fun. And I just want to reiterate, because I said it, you know, I can't really talk specifically about the game past 12 hours, but Ni No Kuni is, it's very good. It's very good indeed. It's very good.
It's
indeed.
Got more going for it than just the awesome looks.
Oh, I mean, it's a Pokemon game itself, I think.
Exactly what it is.
I'm worried about it because I'm thinking Persona 3, Persona 4, PS2 conundrum for me. Am I going to come into Ni No Kuni and be like, well, I'm already so invested in Persona 4, I'd rather do that. Or I'm just so burned out now in JRPGs, I don't want to jump in.
Yeah, the beauty of Ni No Kuni reminds me a lot of Pokemon because I loved Pokemon. I'm a little over it now, but...
I think it's called Pokemon.
Pokemans? Yeah. But, you know, the Pokemon was cool because you could collect, like, you know, you can collect your Bidoof and shit and get it to level 99 if you want, but you could ignore everything and really just get what you want. Maybe you can probably get through the game with 10 Pokemon pretty easily. And so you can do the same thing in Ni No Kuni, which is cool too. Plus, there's this whole system where your guys can fight it in addition, you know, your characters can fight in addition to the character. So there's some, you know, dynamics in the fighting system. It's very
do
good.
The same thing in Persona 4, just, you know. Sure. But Ni No Kuni has this thing going on too with the kid, and which, I mean, it's different, but it reminds me a little bit of the vibe from Unfinished Swan, like where you've got this kid that's in peril, and, you know, he's lost a parent, and I don't know. I'm in love with that game, and I only played it last year at E3, and so I'm very eager. I've kind of just sort of kept myself on lockdown from learning too much about it since I did that last preview back in June of last year, so I'm very excited to play it.
Yeah, I think, you know, needless to say, our review will go up in a few weeks, but needless to say, you're going to want to pay very close attention to that game.
Tony Wortman writes into beyond.ign.com. He says, what is the one trophy that you grinded the most to get? Mine is Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, reaching level 50 in multiplayer. 8 of us would do a circle slap for hours on end. It took forever. Thanks, Tony.
I don't know. The specific one trophy. I mean, platinums for sure, but not like specific like bronzes or silvers.
I mean, mine is an achievement, but Mile High Club in Call of Duty 4, it is totally embarrassing how much time I put into getting that. But I got it and it felt great.
Yeah, I mean,
I didn't break my TV either.
How many times did it take you?
Like probably like literally 1,000. Like can't even explain how many times I played that. I would come home from class and just like, it would be like 4 p.m. and I would just be sitting there grinding away at it. Because I'm not like great at Call of Duty games, but I did, I maxed out the achievements on that game just playing through on veteran. And like it was all just grinding basically for me.
Case?
I would say that would be one of my most memorable ones too. And I did a feature when I was at Official Xbox Magazine on it. It took me 63 times.
Oh, wow.
Which in real life feels like 1,000.
Oh, yeah, sure.
If you do the same thing 63 times over and over.
Mine may be less than 1,000. I don't know. But it definitely felt like it was 1,000. Like it took me multiple days of just trying over and over and over and over again.
I would say two of the worst achievements though, you know, and I know we're talking about trophies, but whatever.
Tomato, tomato.
One of them, it was the original Mass Effect to get the achievement for playing through the game with – playing through, quote, most of the game with the same party where you're like, what's most of the game? How do I figure that out?
Yeah. And the original Mass Effect getting all those achievements was like I had to actually do like 5 like full playthroughs because you had to go through and get all of the biotic stuff and you had to go through again and get each of the separate things.
Yeah, like, you couldn't – in the original Mass Effect, you can't order your teammates to do something and it counts, which I think in Mass Effect 2 and 3 you could. So, like, the biotic attacks counted if you went into your wheel and told Miranda to do something. But in Mass Effect 1, it was you had to do it. Yeah. And so, if you're playing as a soldier, you couldn't do anything.
Yep.
Yeah, like, it was...
And the other one that really sucked, for listeners, if you guys got this one, high fives to you. But and I never got this. My buddy Kyle, his little brother, got this. But in Guitar Hero 3, there's an achievement for beating the entire game not using a guitar controller, but using the regular gamepad.
Oh, God.
Which, like... defeats the whole purpose of playing the game, and when I watched him playing it, it just looks like a terrible experience. So
I believe I have that achievement, but I think it's because it was glitched. I think there was a way if you plugged in like a third-party controller, it just popped up. I believe is what happened. Yeah.
I'll tell you the biggest grind platinum was I think Heavy Rain.
Heavy Rain would be a crazy one.
Heavy Rain was hard, man, because you had
to. Did you not use a guide?
I did. I mean, I beat the game by myself, and then I did it. But you had, remember, you had to.
Yeah, you had to have you had perfect create, playthrough. From
yeah, you
like,
had to create saves and like go backwards through the game because like it would save over everything you did beforehand. Man. It was like a massive pain in the ass to get that.
It
trophy.
Was one of my favorite platinums to get Heavy Rain because I remember I had the review build when we had it, and I skipped that Super Bowl to sit there and do it because I'd beaten it that morning. And then it was like, I bet if I did this because they were all hidden and there was no guide.
That was the beauty of it. They were all hidden.
Yeah,
every
you jump
one
back
of those trophies.
You try to tweak little things. I loved that. I had so much fun with that one.
A recent one is Hardcore Zet Fan in Persona 4 Golden.
Right, I thought you'd write that up.
Yeah, I mean, I finally got that over the weekend. But you have to hear, so you have Teddy right now doing your navigation stuff, right?
Yep.
Early in the game. So, like, imagine, eventually you have the option of having this other character doing that. Imagine every single time when it's like, oh, Senpai, your health is low, and oh, you're affected by poison, you're affected by enervation, you have to hear every single one of those for every single character. So you have to hear 250 different navigation lines throughout the game, which is like, it's like totally insane to try and grind. Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
But no, I got that.
For me, like, yeah, it's platinums and stuff. I mean, I just did DC Universe over the break finally.
You poor bastard.
I finally, it's awesome. And now I'm so re-addicted to DC Universe Online that I just can't wait to get home and play more.
That's what happens to me every time I go back to Borderlands to try and get back up to 100%. I'm like, yeah. Oh, I'm so sick of this. I want to do it. And I play for 10 seconds. And I'm like, yep, back into Borderlands.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That one is probably my longest platinum, I'd imagine. But that's because I'd already put like 250 hours into the game before I just was like, no, I want to platinum it. So I don't know how long that really took.
Hey, real quick before you move on, though, yeah. We talked about Heavy Rain. The one thing I want to give Heavy Rain a lot of credit for, the trophies, is no trophies until the loading screens. And I really hope that more games start to do that. I like you had to kind of wait and be patient to see if you actually did it or not.
Ruin your thing,
yeah, there was no nothing until the creepy Ethan Mars loading screens. And I really enjoyed
that
technique.
You like that because it didn't take you out of the experience?
Yeah, it made me, like, I care because I like trophies. And so it kind of, first of all, made me, like, a little, I'm like, oh, did I get it or not? Like, I have to go through, like, 50. But it also, yeah, was when you're playing Heavy Rain by itself and you don't care about that shit, and most people don't, I think that it's the most immersive way to do trophies. And I assume that Beyond Two Souls will be the same way, but mm-hmm. I haven't really seen any other games do that.
Shout out then for me to the Dead Rising trophy of kill,
genocide. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Driving through the tunnel with the truck.
That was awesome. Before I worked at IGN. I'd come home from the newspaper and turn on the 360 and just sit there in the tunnels driving around.
You had to drive the
zombies.
Motorcycle to it and then drive it all the way through, then get out, and then make it respawn and do it again. Yeah. I did that for so long.
Yeah, yeah. And then my most memorable trophy, I guess one trophy of all time, would be Infamous All the Blast Shards, the original one, where I still have everybody's heard the story, I'm sure, most people at least, for me. When I was reviewing it, and I was just going for trophies. No guides existed, obviously, so I had to take digital photos of my TV screen, then print out the digital photos, and then I went home and went building by building and circled the building and crossed them out in red marker to find the final blast shard. And still couldn't find it because I did it the entire map, couldn't find it. It was the ones on the docks. I found the next day with Chris Roper watching and lost my mind.
Yeah, it was.
Those maps are still on a pillar here at IGN.
In two, it tells you when one is close.
Exactly.
By,
yeah,
and the blue color on the HUD was the same color as the water, and so there was like two that was like, where are they?
Yeah. Nate Fox fixed that later on.
Great game, though. That Infamous.
Great game.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see what the Sucker Punch is up to next.
It's a kart racer.
Can't wait for whoever's been farmed out to do the Infamous for Vita.
Someone.
Nihilistic.
Pat upon Vita.
No! What about that Infamous multiplayer, right?
Oh, my. I'm sure they'll do it.
I mean, that was their attempt with UCG, like the user created content. Yeah, they were like, all right, maybe people will make their own levels and stick around.
It makes sense, I guess.
And some of them were
game.
Funny. Like some of the user created ones actually were pretty clever. But
they added in stuff late. That was the problem. Is like they didn't have like the cutscene stuff ready to go, and I think that would have helped out a lot.
Yeah, my stage was one of the first I think up.
Get a trophy.
But it was so terrible because I'm just not very good at, like, you know, the tools are just too complicated for me. I'm just like, I don't know, this isn't easy enough.
That's how I'm a little big planet. Like, I'm so proud of myself when I make like your level. So your original level was that you fell down and got all the bubbles in Little Big Planet, and you carved into like the land to make that happen. Like, first time I did that, I was like, oh, my level's so cool. It has like a ravine you go into, and then I like boot up a random like I'm feeling lucky level or whatever, and it's like the most incredible ornate thing. And I'm like, I will never
do this. Exactly. Yeah. There's people who are so talented with those tools.
Yeah.
Hey, Colin. What do you say we end the show with something special?
Okay.
Chris G, aka CR4ZChris. He writes in and says, I wish the Beyond crew a very happy new year, and my only request is that I get a shout out before I ship off to Navy RTC boot camp on January 3rd. Shout out
to you, my
shout out to Chris G. Beyond.
Beyond.
Thank you for your service. Good luck to you. I hear they're nice in boot camp, so I wouldn't worry about much. Bring your PlayStation 3 and Vita.
I hear it's a breeze. They'll love that.
Ask your drill sergeant about Persona 4.
You can all play ad hoc Mod Nation Racers. It'll be great.
Oh, my gosh, ladies and gentlemen. This has been Podcast Beyond, episode 273. Remember to be part of the show, beyond@IGN.com. Then you show up at IGN. Remember, that's the big deal. We do the podcast. It's fun. You enjoy it. You download it for free unless somebody's tricking you with the podcast pass. Don't buy it. Don't believe it. You can get this for free. But come to IGN, read the videos, watch the articles. There's more podcasts there too. Thank you. Follow IGN on Twitter @IGN. Follow me @GameOverGreggy. Colin is No Taxation. Garfep is Andrew Goldfarb.
Every time.
I was telling Christine was asking me what the origin was, and I explained that, and then I was telling her every time I say it on Beyond, I eventually my brain immediately says Garfep and then tries to say Andrew Garfield. Like, it's my brain wants to spit that out as fast as possible.
It's just Greg always regrets fucking elderly people.
That's the acronym for it. And then Casey Lynch Lynchtacular on Twitter?
That's correct.
Yeah, okay,
that's
great.
The one.
Good. Whew, that was a close one.
Woo!
I wish that when I started putting in any Twitter name, it would start to guess what I was trying to guess. Not just my friends. You ever do this?
Yeah. Like when you're, especially now, to send a direct message to someone you're not like, you haven't corresponded with before, you have to type in their Twitter name. Right? Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't auto find them. That's really annoying too.
Come on, Twitter.
Yeah. What are you doing?
Clements usually plays us off with a song that you send in and submit to beyond@ign.com. I didn't have time to find a song. Colin wanted me to show him how a man plays Mega Man 3. That's what I had to do. I didn't get around to picking a song. So Casey, do you want to sing or do you want to give the beat and have Goldfarb? Goldfarb can give you a beat and you can freestyle, or you can give him a beat and Goldfarb can freestyle.
I'll do the beat.
All right.
Oh my God, I can't freestyle. Okay.
You ready?
What am I freestyling about?
The Halo 2 cup marrying
it'll be
this
Persona.
Chinatown Wars tape dispenser.
Whoa.
I don't think that's a tape dispenser with a sticker on it.
I'm aware I made that at the old office.
You made it?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, go.
I'm a Halo 2 cup and I love some tape, especially with a sticker on the back of the tape. Chinatown Wars, and we're gonna get married if it's legal today.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream. That's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.